everyone. Welcome to the Racing Writers Podcast. I'm your host, Kelly Crandall. Thank you for clicking and listening along to this episode with guest Jerry Baxter of David Gilliland Racing. Jerry is going to oversee the number 15 team this year with Tanner Gray, and they recently got a head start on the season by being able to test at the new Atlanta Motor Speedway, and that's where we're going to start our conversation with Jerry today. Jerry's going to take us inside David Gilliland Racing, what that's all about, working with his new driver, looking ahead to the season, and we're also going to learn more about Jerry. He is a veteran of the sport, recently spent the last 2 years as a crew chief in the NASCAR Cup Series at Richard Petty Motorsports, working with Eric Jones, Bubba Wallace, but a lot of his success has come in the Truck Series, and Jerry is back there, so he's got some great stories about how he got a job at Kyle Busch Motorsports, working with Bubba Wallace and his attitude, and great things that Jerry brings to the podcast. So really excited to share it. Here is Jerry Baxter on the Racing Writers Podcast. Yeah, see, that's the beauty of not being live, so that when I mess up and I stumble, you know, yeah, make everybody sound nice and pretty.
Yeah, perfect.
Well, Jerry, once again, I appreciate you doing this. Really have been looking forward to it. Let's start with some present-day stuff, which is you and Tanner, everybody at DGR, got the opportunity to go down to Atlanta, test that new facility, check it out for the first time. Let's start with just the facility and getting to see that and what it looks like, maybe some first impressions of the repave and the reprofile, because, of course, that's going to be a hot topic when we get down there.
Yeah, it sure is. You know, when we drove in the gate and I seen the place, I was actually a little shocked. I knew it would be a lot different, but it's pretty steep and it actually looks pretty darn nice. I don't know. We'll have to see how the racing goes on it, but we did a little bit of pack racing last night or a couple times yesterday. Now, not a big pack, only three cars at a time, but it seemed like it was decent. So I applaud them for trying something new. Hopefully it'll all work out for them, but it was pretty amazing to see it when you drove in.
Did it look any narrower? Because I know that's been a big topic of conversation, is maybe how much different it's going to be in that regard because of what they took away. It sounds like they kind of narrowed up the corners a little bit. Did you notice any of that at all when you guys were out there?
Well, not driving, you know, not when he's out there running, you don't notice it, but absolutely it's narrower than it used to be. But I don't think it's really a big issue. There's a lot of tracks that are not much wider than that, if any. So I don't think that's a big deal. I think it's just because people are used to what they used to see. So that'll probably be a topic, you know. I guess one of my concerns would be that the track is a mile and a half and it's similar to a speedway race where, you know, like with a truck, you're not lifting off throttle at all. We were running 30 lap runs and you would stay wide open the whole time. So when I see stuff like that, that kind of tells me that on restarts, they don't have like a double yellow line like they would at Daytona or Talladega. But with the track being a little bit narrower and a truck with all the drag, I'm sure that they're going to have big runs on the restart. So it'll kind of funnel down. And I think NASCAR is going to have to look at that. And I talked to Brad Moran about it last night for a little bit. And they hate being a cop on every little topic. But, you know, it might be something that they're going to have to discuss before we go down there.
It certainly sounds like the notebook from years past when it comes to Atlanta is going to be thrown completely out the window, and you and the drivers, everybody, it's just going to be completely different when you go down there, right? You have to have an open mind because it's not going to be the Atlanta that you're used to preparing for.
Yeah, we did. And there's a lot of rule changes on the trucks this year. And I've been out of the Truck Series for a couple of years and, you know, it's changed quite a bit. But when we go down there with the setups that they got on the trucks, what we tried to do was, we don't know what the answers are on all this new stuff. So what we tried to do was be open-minded on it and just go ahead and get out of the box and do different things and try things. And it was actually pretty successful. I think we had a good test plan and it was good to see. So I'm thinking you're for sure right, though, on throwing out the book.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your new driver. As I mentioned, you have taken over the reins of the 15 team over there at David Gilliland Racing. What's your impression so far of Tanner and just the little bit that I'm sure you guys are trying to build chemistry and have been spending time together already? What's your impressions of your new shoe you got in there?
Well, he's young, of course, but he was the youngest pro stock champion ever in the NHRA by a lot. And it wasn't something he went and tested to learn. It's something he just went and did. And he's just good. He's a good driver. But he's also a good student. And, you know, yesterday when we were down there, I made a whole big hit list, you know, a week ago where we sat here for probably 2 hours. And I went through all these things about basic, what I thought basic racing things that I don't know what he knows. So I try to tell him that. I don't know what you know, but I'm going to treat you like you don't know anything. And then, you know, I go through all this stuff with him, and he applied really good yesterday. I look really good. Like, I'm going to say 80% of what we had told him, he applied. And that made me pretty darn happy. And, you know, he just didn't fight nothing. He was in, all in.
It seems like to me, Jerry, just from the outside looking in, that the potential is there. We're just waiting to see him break out. Do you feel the same way, that there's so much more to see from him?
Well, I do. And again, back to the, you know, I'm new with him and with this company, the whole deal, but, you know, got pretty strong support around here with Chad Johnson and Mike Hillman and Wes Ward and all them. And they kind of give me a background on what to expect, what not to expect. And it's definitely made it easier. And the kid just seems real receptive to everything. He hasn't balked at anything. It's like, okay, I can do that. Okay. You know, so that's good. You know, and a lot of kids ain't that way.
I mean, it's good that you have a driver who wants to listen to you and is not just out on his own island, right? Not being stubborn.
Absolutely. And there's a bunch of stubborn ones. I've been around them.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've got quite the history of the sport. I'm sure you've dealt with a little bit of everything. Jerry, what is it like just being back in the Truck Series and getting ready to go back to a series that you, of course, have had so much success at? You spent the last 2 years in the Cup Series working for Richard Petty Motorsports. Take me through the decision to make this move. Was it your decision? And again, how do you feel just about going back to a series where you're clearly very comfortable in?
Well, over my career, never really wanted to ever be involved with the Cup Series. I kind of value the Sundays and the weekends and, you know, whatever with family and all that stuff. And then a couple of years ago, Bubba was bothering me a bunch about, hey, you need to come do this deal at the Petty's, because we had done good in the Truck Series together. And I was like, nah, I ain't going to do that. And then one day I started thinking about it. I was like, you know what, heck, let's just do it. So I went and did it, and we did good. We did a lot better than he had done in the past. And then last year having Eric Jones, that was pretty cool. But ultimately, it's like I have a life too. And I'm older. I'm 60 years old. So I'm like, man, I got to enjoy this, you know? So I got to step out. So I talked to my wife about it. And she's like, if you want to do Cup again, go ahead. But you're going to have to call one of your buddies and probably sleep in their garage. But no, it was good. You know, like Felipe Lopez kind of runs the company there. You know, we talked about it, I don't know, three quarters of the way through the season. And I just kind of told him, I said, Felipe, I gotta do something different. You know, I'm just 38 weeks a year compared to 23 and testing and on and on. And, you know how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you got to do it. You put in two full seasons. You, of course, in the 80s and the 90s, you had made some starts as a crew chief. But you put in two full seasons, you got to do it. But it's not, as you said, it's not something that's for everybody. And the Cup grind is just so much different, as you know, than the other series.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I look back on it, and I did have a good time, even though it was a lot of work. I had, at Richard Petty's, they had, like, really good guys, really good employees. And then ultimately, you know, got to crew chief Richard Petty's car for 2 years. So that's pretty cool. But I've said this a million times, but it's like on Tuesday mornings up there, you know, Dale Inman will come in and he'll say, well, tell me how it went. Why'd you do this? Why'd you do that? He's 86 years old. And I think he could still probably get it done. Then Richard comes in after him. He's just kind of mean, you know. Why don't you do better? But I'm okay with that. You know, I'm okay with that. So, but yeah, it was special to be able to do it, right?
You say special, and that's what sticks out to me, is I got that impression from you and really anybody who goes over there, the fact that you can say, you know, Dale Inman pops in or Richard Petty pops in, and you have legends like that to talk to, not just to work for, but to talk to, that pop in, want to know what's going on and can probably learn, and you get so many stories from them. As you said, I think special is the right word, right? That you got to do that.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, everybody's known Richard forever and everything, but, you know, I look up to Dale Inman so much. I don't know what he's got. He's got like 240 Cup wins and 8 championships. And he's the one to talk to for me, you know.
Exactly. That's so cool. So going back to the Truck Series, Jerry, do you expect it'll be any different from the last time you were there? I mean, I'm sure maybe some procedures and things are probably a little different, but I can't imagine that there's going to be too much that you have to reacclimate to going back to that series, right?
Well, the series has changed. Not so much the vehicles themselves hasn't changed a lot, but I think the level of competition has definitely changed. I've been trying to review some of the races from last year, and I see that it's a lot different than it was my last year doing the Truck Series with Brett Moffitt, and I think we won maybe like 4 times, something like that. And I look at the races last year, and I'm thinking to myself, Jesus, we could get Tanner to win 4 times. That'd be pretty darn good, because it's pretty difficult looking. On the good side, though, which this isn't probably what you want to talk about, but they have changed these trucks now to, on the suspension, to where they have shaft springs or bump stops, whatever people want to call them, which is what they run in the Cup Series. So I think yesterday when we were at Atlanta testing, I think that gave us a leg up on the others that were there. There was the Ford truck with John Hunter there, and you know, which they have pretty good information, obviously, with Toyota. And there was GMS truck there with Grant Enfinger. But I felt like with all the stuff that we had done over the last couple of years in the Cup Series, that that kind of helped and was able to speed up, you know, getting those trucks to run good. And he was good. He was really good. So I don't know. I think competition will be better and a slight difference in the trucks.
Well, I absolutely want to bring that up because you said there about the slight difference in the trucks and you said some of the underneath stuff there. For race fans, they'll notice that there's been changes to the noses and the tails for all manufacturers. Do you think that that's going to play any part in the difference of either competition or what you guys have to get used to? Will those changes to the noses and the tails affect things too much for you guys?
Well, there's actually more changes than that. But the reality is that, you know, we know what our trucks are, but we don't know exactly what their trucks are because, you know, you're really not privy to that information. So that'll come over the next couple of months, you know, that you'll be able to see how it goes. I feel like this Ford deal compared to what I've seen in the past, you know, 2 years ago, I think it's pretty strong on the body situation. And I'm sure it's going to have something to do with it. They're going to hit on it in some tracks are not, but I feel pretty good about it.
Well, that's good. It's better than not having any idea what's going to go on.
Right, right.
So, Jerry, as we get ready for 2022, again, I mentioned it a few times, you have quite the history in the sport and have been a crew chief for quite some time. When was your first, I guess, first year in the sport? Were you a crew chief right off the bat? And how long, I guess, what year now are you going into being in the sport?
So, okay, I told you already I'm old. I went and I did the Cup Series in 1980 with James Hilton, and not the crew chief. I was just the guy, and you know, limited amount of employees and worked their guts out and all that stuff. And then I did that, and I had a lot of guidance from like Richard Childress and DK Ulrich and all those old timey racers, you know, and that was good for me. But after a short amount of time, like a year and a half or something, I left and went back to California where I'm from, and I went to work for a guy named Ivan Baldwin. And Ernie Irvin, you know Ernie, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so he was my helper, and we built chassis out there. And Ivan ended up leaving and going to be the crew chief for Bill Elliott on the old Coors car. So I bought the company, and then I continued down building cars. Ernie eventually left too and came back here. But I stayed out there for another few years or whatever, and I think I ended up building about 350 cars over a 10-year span, you know, my company did. And we had so much success. It was so fun. But in the meantime, I would kind of just do some one-off deals, like do the West Series or did some Cup races, a few here and there, just to kind of learn the craft, you know. And then when I ended up moving back here, went to work for Ernie Irvin at his truck team, and then, you know, I was kind of given the spot. Here you go, dude. So did a couple of years with Ernie, and then Mike Walter hired me, and I was there a long time. I don't know, probably, I don't know how long, maybe 12, 13 years. I don't know, long time. So had quite the experience with that clown. He's amazing. But yeah, we tease about it all the time still, you know. But so I learned a lot from Mike Waltrip, and then, you know, went to Kyle Busch's and GMS. So I don't know. It's pretty well-rounded.
Yeah. Let me jump back to Waltrip for a second because I wanted to ask about that since you opened the door. I was going to say, when it comes to Diamond Waltrip Racing, I believe it was called at the time, that had to have been just a good time. I mean, the drivers over there, you look at some of the drivers, not only Mikey, but I believe David Ruderman was over there, Trevor Bayne you got to work with, Scott Speed, I believe, at one point.
Yep.
So, yeah, that had to have been just a good time.
It was a good time, and I was able to actually win a couple races with Michael driving. That was pretty cool. And then David Ruderman, I think we won with, and we finished second in the points to Carl Edwards, and so that was nice. And then Scott Speed and Trevor, those were all kind of basically part-time deals, but they were good things. And, you know, did Martin Truex, did Ryan Truex. There's a whole list of people that we did, and it was pretty good time, you know, back then.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there has to be a story, because it seems like most people do who come from the West Coast and get a job in racing. There's some story about having to pick up right away and, okay, you're starting on Monday or I need you tomorrow and I need you to get here. Did you have any of that when you came back from the West Coast?
My original story was that. Yeah, exactly. I was told I had to be here on Tuesday and it was Saturday when they called me.
Oh, my goodness. And that was with Hilton? Suitcase.
Yes. Packed my suitcase and told my parents I was out and off I went. So, yeah, pretty cool.
How did they react to something like that where you get the phone call and, as you said, a few minutes later you're out the door?
Oh, they knew. They knew what was coming.
Yeah.
You know, that's all I ever talked about. So I think you got to kind of be that way anyways to do this. You got to be all in and you got to know from the get-go, here's what I'm going to do. And go from there. So they kind of knew.
Right. And as you said, you weren't a crew chief right away. When you did start making your starts as a crew chief, I guess I would put it, is I'm looking at some of the names on the list just in the Cup Series, again, before you even ran for Richard Petty with Bubba and Eric Jones. I mean, four races with Robbie Gordon. He's a character. Boris said, even going all the way back to Randy LaJoy, what do you remember about any of those races or just the early days of calling Cup races as a crew chief?
Well, I was a nervous wreck, of course. But, you know, some of the names you just named, like Robbie Gordon, that's a pretty tough nut right there. He's pretty demanding. He's really skilled. But he's one of those guys that's really hard to harness his emotions and all that stuff. So I think that was a good training ground for me, you know, because you got like Randy LaJoy or Michael or any of them. They're just kind of, you know, they're cutting up all the time, acting crazy. But I was able to learn from Robbie, you know, how to kind of control that situation. And of course, Boris said was the same way. So I think that kind of helped me, you know, doing that.
Kyle Busch Motorsports, you go there. Of course, that company has a lot of success. You have a lot of success regardless of who's driving the race trucks. But I'm curious, when you work for a company that is run by Kyle Busch, who we know he wants to win, he's going to make sure you all have the resources. Is that an easy thing to do, to work for someone like that?
Well, let me give you a quick background. I think it was around 2012. I did a year in the truck series with Cale Gale. I don't know if you remember him or not, but we ran medium, not that great. We ran mediocre all year long. We get to Homestead for the final race, and I had this plan in my head where I was going to save a set of tires, and if something came out at the very end, we're putting them on, and we're going to beat these guys' butts. And sure enough, Kyle leads the whole dang race. And caution comes out with just a few to go. I bring Cale down pit road, put on these four tires. I think he restarts like maybe 12th or something with just a few to go. And, of course, at Homestead, you just drive by him when you have tires. And coming to the finish line, him and Kyle are side by side, and they end up crashing, but Cale beats him across the line. So we beat Kyle Busch. That was pretty cool. So then about, I don't know, 2 weeks later, I get a call from Kyle Busch. He's like, hey, why don't you come over and talk to me? And I went over there, and I didn't know him at this point, but geez, them guys that worked on his truck, they didn't like me. Not at all. But ultimately, he taught me so much, and he taught them drivers so much. And it was like at the beginning with Bubba. Bubba had this attitude, I'm better than they are. I can do this. But he wasn't. He needed to learn. And once he decided to say, okay, teach me, then it was like game on. Like the first year, we only won one race. I think we won Martinsville. But like the next year, I think I don't remember how many won, four or five?
Four,
and,
yeah.
Four, yeah. And I remember the last race of the season was Homestead again, and we won with Bubba. And I think Kyle finished second in that race or whatever. So every week he goes to the driver debriefs, you know, on Monday mornings, and I don't know how Kyle does it, but he remembers like every lap of every race. I don't know how he does it, but pretty impressive that what he teaches these kids and me and the rest of the crew chiefs, you know.
That is an awesome story going back to Homestead with Cale, because now that you say it, I remember that race. That was one heck of a finish, and to think that's how it started at all. That's awesome.
That is cool. That's really cool. And you know, somebody sent me a link about, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, two, three, 4 weeks ago, whatever. And it was the day, and they showed the video of it. It's pretty cool. You know, like the day, whatever it was, 9 years ago, 10 years ago. Pretty cool.
You mentioned Bubba, and you worked with him, of course, at Kyle Busch Motorsports. You just talked there about kind of how he approached things. And then when you reunited with him at Richard Petty Motorsports, did you see any difference in him? Did you see a growth in him, Jerry? Or was it still one of those things where you as the veteran maybe had to get on him sometimes about, hey, let's humble ourselves, let's straighten ourselves out? Was it still the same Bubba, or has he kind of grown into his own a little bit?
Well, he was definitely different, no question. One of the things when he was asking me to come there to Richard's and do that deal, I said a few minutes ago, I had just came off of the truck series with Brett Moffitt and won a decent amount of races and all that stuff. And, you know, he, like I said before, he always acted like he was better than the rest, like he knew he could do it. And but yet he still had a lot to learn. Well, he came to me and said, now, listen, if you come here to the Petty's, you're going to have to curb your expectations because we have 30 employees. And that's counting all the carpet walkers, you know, the LPR people, the whole company. That's everybody. You ain't going to have what you had in the past. So you're going to have to curb your expectations. So I think that really helped me, you know, going there, knowing that, hey, if we run top 20, that's okay. I think we ended up getting maybe around six top 10s, which was pretty darn good, you know, for where they were at that point. But he was patient the whole year, which really kind of surprised me. So it wasn't what I was expecting, but it was good.
Has it been a nice change of pace to go from working with drivers full-time, then I think for you had a stint where there was a couple different drivers you were working with, if I'm correct in looking at my stuff here, and then now you're back to one primary driver again. That's got to be a whole lot nicer than cycling through drivers and everybody's different and how you got to prepare for different drivers, right? When you just have one driver and you can focus on that team and what you're doing from a week-to-week basis, right?
Right. It's a lot different. It's a lot easier. And, you know, when, like at Michael's, when I was, they were rotating all those drivers through the system and everything, you know, I call them Little League dads, the ones that the dads that show up and they think their kid is, you know, Jeff Gordon or Kyle Busch, and they're not. They got a lot long way to go. Those people are hard to deal with, you know, from week to week, but, you know, you just kind of weather the storm. But when it's a constant like that, then they understand, and it makes it a lot easier on you, for sure.
So again, Jerry, with the time that you've put in this sport, how many different jobs have you had? Because again, it's easy to look up your crew chief statistics, but as we know, when you first came into the sport, you weren't a crew chief at first. What are other roles or other things that you've done that we may not know about?
I mean, I really don't have any. I was a chassis builder on the West Coast for quite some time. As far as coming back here and doing my job, I pretty much was like the car chief from the get-go, and then eventually got to be the crew chief. I never was the tire guy or the motor house driver or the hauler driver. I was never was that guy. I just did those basic jobs, right? So that's pretty fortunate, because who gets to do that, right? You gotta start at the bottom and go up. But yeah, that's pretty much me.
Yeah, normally there's always stories of starting with, you know, being asked if you can hold a broom.
Absolutely.
There's so. Probably a lot of stories, again, when it comes to your career that you could tell if you had time to, and there's probably stories you can't tell or don't want to tell. Are there ones, though, that you have that are a go-to at a party or when people ask about your career?
You know what? I got so many of them. We actually drove down to Atlanta to the test yesterday, and we got done, I think it ended at 8 o'clock at night. It was about 11 o'clock. We're going up Highway 85, and there was four of us in the expedition, and two of them just finally said to me, Jerry, stop. We heard enough of them. We were just, you know, trying to stay awake and talking and telling stories, but I probably don't have anything specific I need to talk about. So you guys know who I've dealt with. So with Michael Walter, it was nonstop everything, because he's a nut.
All right.
So then Bobby Kennedy, who kind of ran Michael's company, you know, he taught me a lot, and he was the same way. They're Randy LaJoy, they're just all the same, you know, so probably nothing specific that I should go through.
Right. I mean, but at the same time, when you're being honest with yourself, I mean, there has to be things where, and again, I'm not saying you have to tell any stories, but it's not always going to be good times and rainbows and butterflies, right? Everybody has trials and tribulations in this sport that I'm sure you just as well have gone through.
Oh, no, for sure. I mean, back to Michael Walter again, he was, I don't remember, you would know, but I think he was like 0 for 400 and something races, like never won 462.
I believe it was, 462.
Yeah, never won a race. And we would go to them, at the time it was Busch Series, we'd go there and we won some races with him. But, you know, he's thinking to himself, just like every other driver, I'm great. I can do this. I just don't have good enough stuff. And then we would go to the track, and we might run good one week, but the next week we're not good. And he would say, you know, this is the worst car in the history of the world. And the history of the world is a long time. And you guys know that I've drove some really crappy cars. So what are we going to do here? And it was like that a lot, you know, but not when we left track. You know, he was serious when he was there, but when we left track, it was easy.
Right. There's a theme as well, Jerry, that I've noticed in your career of you've worked with a lot of younger drivers. Is that just how it's worked out over the years? Or do you enjoy getting to work with, again, drivers that you can help shape and hopefully are easy and receptive to veteran experience? Is that just how it's worked out? Or do you prefer to be able to work with a lot of these young guys? Because you've worked with quite a few of them.
I've never really targeted at that, but it's just worked out that way. And, you know, just like Christopher Bell, I remember taking him to Hickory Speedway with a late model, and he comes from an open wheel background. He didn't know how to use a clutch. He didn't know how to shift a car. We had to teach him all that kind of stuff, like basics. Here's how you drive. And, you know, he had no idea, and he's turned into what he is. So it's a challenge, but it's not something that I've ever targeted.
Right. How do you interact with your drivers, especially younger drivers? You just a minute ago told some good stuff about Bubba. You just had that little thing there about Christopher Bell. When you're the veteran, when you're the leader, and you're working with younger drivers, it strikes me, Jerry, that you don't take any nonsense. Is that true? What is the dynamic between you and your drivers?
Well, as far as during the race, that's true. I don't take no nonsense from them because I kind of know. And when they're young, they're emotional, all that stuff. So I get all that stuff. But I think kind of like the key to having longevity in the sport is that I don't go in there like I'm 60 years old. I go in there like I'm one of them today. And then when next week's stuff changes, I change with it. I never try to be that guy. Oh, this is the way we did it back in the day. I try to never be that guy. And I think that's kind of been, you know, a key to me having some longevity. So
I was going to bring that up because it does. It feels like you need to be able to keep an open mind and adapt if you're going to survive in this sport, right? Because I'm sure you can attest there's so many changes and the sport is constantly evolving that if you don't evolve with it, you're not going to last long.
Well, that's absolutely the truth. And it kind of shows there's like nobody my age out there doing it. You know, nobody, crew chief in the 43 last year that was my age, you know, and not that I'm winning the races, but we did pretty damn good. So you just got to go with the flow and learn it and be a part of those people's lives and not back like, you know, just not act hard-headed.
And then a lot of it too, now you talk about people who have crew chiefed or who have been around that are not your age. I mean, a lot of them are all now with that engineering background. So I feel like for you, it's got to be a sense of accomplishment that, you know, you're still around and still making it work. And you don't, you know, necessarily come out of that college engineering degree pool that it seems like most teams are picking crew chiefs from these days.
Well, that's true. And, you know, but that's part of what I've done is like the whole time I've definitely surrounded myself with good engineers and people that'll believe in whatever I'm trying to tell them. And then, you know, those guys, they're the hardest working guys in the sport. There's no question, especially when they're, you know, 25, 30 years old and they're just out of school or whatever they are. Them kids are digging the whole time. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to surround myself with a bunch of good people. So that just makes my job easier.
What has been the hardest to adapt to? Or has there been something on the reverse side where that is commonplace now in the sport that you ever stop yourself and think, man, it would have been so much easier if we did it back like that back in the day?
Well, that's every day you think that stuff. But as far as like stuff lately, the hardest stuff for me was to be able to get in my head that these races are 500 laps or 500 miles, which I think is just craziness. And, you know, that's kind of back to where I think the truck series or the Xfinity series is so much better for me now. That doesn't mean it's right. That's just me, because I think our whole country is, you know, different nowadays. It doesn't have the attention span that's required for a 500-mile race. And, you know, I think that eventually will change. And that was one of the things that I had to learn a lot about over the last 2 years and, you know, how to, you know, not get wrapped up in the moment. You got to think about the long haul here, because it's a long haul. There's 3.5-4 hours sometimes. You know what I'm talking about. You're there every week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the truck series, it seems like they have that good balance of nice, entertaining races that don't take up too much of your afternoon or your evening. They have that nice, what, 2, not even 3-hour event sometimes, and it does. It strikes that nice chord.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it used to be funny back, you know, a few years ago, I'd look at it and I'd say, geez, this race is 134 laps on a mile and a half track. And now when it's like you go to Charlotte, it's 400 laps at a mile and a half track. I'm like, wow, I was blessed back then.
Yeah, 400 laps for the Coke 600. That had to have really been a big culture shock for you, going from the Truck Series and doing two of those races again for the last 2 years in the Cup Series, huh?
Absolutely. And, you know, Eric Jones, he'd make fun of me every week. You know, we'd be out there racing, and you've already ran two truck races, and you still got 100 laps to go. And he'd say, hey, Jared, what do you think? Only got 100 to go. You know, we always joking around about it because he knew what I thought of it. So it was kind of good, you know, to break it up during the race.
Right. Well, let's circle it back here as we wrap up to David Gilliland race and DGR. As I said, you're spending time with Tanner. You guys are getting ready to go. What have you seen, Jerry, just from your new organization? What is this organization as a whole capable of? And again, why was it somewhere that you felt like would be a good fit for you?
Well, there's a few reasons, but let's start with the first thing. I came over here a couple of years ago before I went and did the Cup program, and I looked at what they had going on. David had invited me over to maybe come and work on one of their deals, and I looked at what they were doing and what they had, and it just seemed like a lot of turmoil, or not necessarily turmoil, but like a lot of work, and they were kind of here and there and over here, and you know, there was not a lot of structure. So when I came back here a couple months ago to go through it, I was absolutely shocked. They build all their own chassis here, they do all their own bodies here, they do everything here. And when I seen the structure that Wes Ward had set up and the employees' enthusiasm and all that stuff, that was like, man, this is a big change. This is a pretty cool deal. And then, I don't know, I forgot what the last I was going to say, but oh well.
I was just you know, you mentioned David Gilliland there. Is it a benefit, do you think, Jerry, when you have a former driver who understands racing overseeing an operation like this? Because I would think that for somebody like David, like, he gets it. He knows, okay, this is the way we need to do things, or I need to make sure we surround ourselves with people who know what we're going to need and how to succeed. Is that a benefit, you think, to what DGR can do because David has that racer's mentality?
I think it is. And, you know, yesterday being the first day working with Tanner down there in Atlanta, David went down there for that test, and which kind of surprised me. Most owners wouldn't do that, but he did. And that's because he's all in. He sees, he cares. And things would come up during the test where I would tell Tanner, hey, just remember what we're here for. Don't get out of line here. This is what we're trying to do. This is what we're kind of trying to accomplish. Don't tell me things you think might be. Tell me the facts, and we'll be better. And David would come up to me, and he said, man, that was good right there. That's what the kid needs. And that's just how David is. He's sitting there listening to everything. He doesn't butt in, which is kind of cool, but he's welcome to if he wants to.
Right. Kind of have to know when to let you do your job and when it's when it's appropriate for him to speak up and say something. That's a good thing to have. Right. Jerry, one last thing. Let's wrap it up with this. I know, and again, I know it's early. It's only January. There's a long way to go and lots of things to feel out, you know, as you guys get going in the season. But when you start to lay out maybe some goals or lay out some expectations or benchmarks to hit along the way for you and Tanner, your team specifically, have you started putting those together of what you would like to do this year with this 15 team?
Well, I'm really not a goal-oriented person. But I have talked to Tanner about this, and Tanner's grandfather, Johnny, who is, you know, NHRA guy forever, he understands racing. He's the one kind of supporting this along with Ford Motor Company. And we all kind of talked, and it was kind of like, you know, this is Tanner's third year, I believe, something like that. And these vehicles here at David Gilliland's are really nice. They really are. And what they've gave me is they've gave me, like, super good team. Like, I have really good guys. When we went there yesterday for the first time, it was like we'd all been working together for a while. So, you know, what Tanner said to me in front of his grandfather was like, man, if I don't win this year, I don't do good. I think I got to look in the mirror. And I was like, that's pretty cool. Because most kids won't say that, you know.
Right.
So that's a good thing. So I don't really have goals, but I expect we'll do good.
Yeah. Oh, and again, you know, one race at a time, one weekend at a time. But it seems like you've got a driver, again, that has his head on his shoulders and knows that all the resources and everything are there to get the job done.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's the truth. So it's on my shoulders, his shoulders. We'll do it.
Yeah. One week at a time. Jerry, I'm sure that if we really sat down and really got into it, we could talk about so many things because, again, you've been here for quite a long time. You've done some great things in this sport. But I appreciate you letting me pick your brain for a little bit today and looking ahead to this season. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kelly.
My thanks again to Jerry for coming on the podcast and giving me some time to pick his brain. As I said, we really only scratched the surface. He's done so much in this sport and has been in all the series. He's worked with a lot of different drivers. So thank you, Jerry, for coming on the podcast and sharing that with us. My thanks, of course, to you for clicking and listening along. Please leave a rating and review if you haven't done that already. Make sure you reach out to me on social media with any feedback. My Twitter handle is at Kelly Crandall. You can also search for me on Facebook. Make sure you look for the public Facebook page for links to the podcast as well as racer.com. You can find me on Instagram if you want to follow all of my racing adventures there. And when you're online this week, make sure you go to Patreon. Patreon.com/Kelly Crandall. It's more behind the scenes content that goes along with the podcast, a way to support me. You have a chance to see who the guests are going to be in the podcast, ask questions to the guests, or maybe want to hang out and ask me questions about the process. So make sure you check out that as well. That is all for this week on the program. Next week, we're going to talk with Brian Murphy of Stewart Haas Racing. Brian's going to take us inside not only his role, but a lot about the next-gen car and what is coming and how Cup Series teams are dealing with that. So I will see you right back here next Monday on the Racing Writers Podcast.